From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1988 at a train station in Wilmington, Delaware. Senator Joe Biden announced he was running for president in a bid to become the youngest president since JFK. He was viewed as a strong candidate early in that race because of his ability to raise money and his moderate political views, and analysts figured he had the potential to attract Republicans in a national election. It didn't work out for Biden in 1988, so he ran for president 20 years later. He was never much of a factor in the 2008 contest between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, but of course, he would become Obama's running mate and the vice president. And so here we are, 12 years after that, 32 years after his first try for the White House, he's got a real shot to finally become president. The latest national polling reflects the latest polling from the early voting states. Biden is battling with Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders for the lead, and he is consistently described by voters as the safest choice for president. In recent months, we've welcomed supporters of numerous campaigns, but we rarely hear from a vigorous, excited base of Biden supporters, and we have tried to pull together a panel of Biden's fans in Rochester. We're going to discuss whether the ostensible safe choice is also the best choice, and I confess this has not been easy to pull together a panel of Biden supporters. So a little bit of backstory before we say hello here in studio. On this day, number one, if you're listening on WRUR, we're glad to have you. Thank you. We're going to have live programming of Connections on WRUR, even on days when there are impeachment trial hearings from the U.S. Senate. If you are following the impeachment trial, that's on WXXI, and here we are on WRUR streaming as well, and thank you. Thanks for taking the time to find us here. Join the conversation if you like here. Same number as always. It's 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. It's 263-9994. It's connections at WXXI.org. And I'm joined now by Devin McAndrew Griner, who's on the phone with us. He's a grad student and a Biden supporter. And before I get any further, let me just say hello to Devin, who's on with us. Hi, Devin. How are you?
Hi. Good, Evan. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Very good. And so, also, we expected to see one of the really vigorous, ardent supporters of Joe Biden in studio, and that's Sandra Frankel, who is the former Brighton Town supervisor and former candidate for lieutenant governor. And I think we just crossed some wires with Sandy, but we'll see if we can get in touch with Sandy. Does anybody? No. Okay. Anyway, we're going to see if we can get in touch with Sandy. So, Devin, you won't be alone here. We had a third guest who had to cancel from illness this morning. However, Devin, I will say you are the youngest Biden supporter who not only put their hand up and said, I'm not just going to support Joe Biden because he's the safe choice. I think this is the best choice. Is that fair? Why do you feel that way?
Well, first off, I think it's sort of interesting that you're saying you're having a hard time finding a Joe Biden supporter. You know, I found you on Twitter just because someone happened to mention that you were looking for one, and I'm known as an enthusiastic Joe Biden supporter. You might have had better luck if you were at a barber shop in South Carolina or on a boom lift or at a diner. I think that's sort of very telling and poetic. But I think Joe Biden, I mean, first and foremost, he's got the best shot at beating Donald Trump. And I want to be clear that I don't think that's the only reason why. You know, there's a lot of, like, people like to frame this issue like, that's the only reason and there's no substance to Joe. But it's an important issue, and it's the most important issue because, you know, Donald Trump is doing potentially irrevocable damage to the country. Why I'm enthusiastically in supporting Joe Biden isn't just because I think he's the best shot to beat Donald Trump, but because he's the only one that's fundamentally diagnosing correctly the issue at stake in this election and moving forward, which is that we have to restore the soul of this country. We're so divided right now. Donald Trump is not necessarily the cause or a symptom of it. I think he's more of an accelerator. And I think that, you know, Joe Biden is someone who can right the ship and at least attempt. Who knows if we're going to be able to heal, but he's the only one that's willing to give it a shot. And I think that's exactly what we need right now.
So let's explore that. And by the way, Devin, you won't be alone here. Sandy is on her way to the studio. Just had some signals crossed on the day, but she'll be joining us in just a moment. She's the former Brighton Town supervisor, former candidate for lieutenant governor of the state of New York. And Sandy will be joining us in a moment. Also, a significant amount of the support of Joe Biden is in sort of MCDC, Monroe County's Democratic Committee. Brittany Wells is the chair of the party locally. She's a delegate for Joe Biden. And there are a number of people who sort of work in the party structure who are at least publicly supporting Joe Biden. But to Devin's point, you think we'd be more likely to find certainly his support skews older. I mean, I think you'd have to also acknowledge that, Devin. I mean, right now there is a bit of a generational divide in the Democratic primary. Is that fair?
Absolutely. I mean, young people just tilt towards wanting to change the system. And I think that that's fair. Like, full disclosure, I actually voted for Bernie in 2016 because I thought the transition from an Obama administration to a Sanders administration would make a whole lot of sense. But I just don't think right now we're in a place where we can go from one brand of chaos to another brand of chaos. And I'm not saying that universal health care or whatever else is chaos, but there's no doubt that what Bernie is trying to do is upend current norms. And I just don't think that we can make that transition. So there is a divide, but I don't know that that's going to be a problem for Joe in the long run.
No, that's an interesting point that I confess it's not one that I'd spent a whole lot of time thinking about. I mean, when voters think about and when people think about what kind of a presidency a Biden presidency would be, a Klobuchar presidency would be, a Sanders presidency would be, it was... You know, it's kind of in a vacuum, whereas what you're saying is it is if you want to go where Sanders wants to take the country, it is logical and frankly more harmonious and more likely to be accomplished coming off of a presidency like the Obama presidency as opposed to where we currently are. Fair?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So on the question of healing, this is where I think the Democratic electorate is still pretty divided. You're right. There's a number of voters who are not really all that interested in healing. And there are a number of voters who feel that is sort of a Trojan horse for capitulation. In other words, you know, you may get a few more Republican votes from the electorate, but you're not going to get votes in Congress. We're not going to have a Biden presidency in which Republicans in Congress vote on his bills, that we are so now addicted to this partisan warfare that what Biden is promising or at least offering is sort of naive. That's the criticism. What do you make of that, Devin?
I mean, I just think it's a little bit more naive to suggest that someone like Bernie Sanders, who doesn't even have a coalition and broad support in the Democratic Party. And I, first off, I really like Bernie Sanders a lot, so I'm not disparaging him. But I mean, on this point, it's like, he doesn't even have a coalition with his own party, so his only mode of getting things done will probably be through presidential decree, which does not unite the country, and it further accelerates where we're at. So I just take it back to, yeah, it's going to be really hard, and I don't think that Joe Biden is under any illusions of how difficult that task is going to be, and it's a tight line to walk because, as you say, you know, you don't look at your opponents for a second, they might stab you in the back. But that doesn't mean that it's not, like, of utmost importance that we at least try to come to some degree of normalcy. I mean, social psychologist Jonathan Haidt wrote a book called The Coddling of the American Mind. And in it, he detailed how it used to be the case that, like, within the Democratic Party and among the electorate, you know, you could agree on 6 out of 10 issues and it's fine. And nowadays it's not fine. Now you have to agree a 10 out of 10. Otherwise, you know, you're the enemy. And so Joe Biden will operate from a position of, you know, building consensus. And there's nothing more enduring or powerful than consensus.
So
he'll at least attempt it.
Well, and so when you look at that framework of a candidate that appeals to you, let me ask you why an Amy Klobuchar or a Pete Buttigieg doesn't rise higher than Biden for you.
I mean, I really like both of those candidates, but I think at the end of the day, Joe Biden is a known entity. America, I mean, Joe Biden, the politician, I think is indistinguishable from Joe Biden, the man. He was vice president of one of the most successful and popular administrations, even across party lines. I mean, I know Republicans that like that administration in decades. And so if experience matters and if the office matters, then you want someone that has really been in the room. And that's not to say I don't think Buttigieg or Klobuchar would be good nominees or good presidents, but when you have someone like Biden in the race, I don't know why you trade someone with less experience for someone that's been incredibly instrumental in a lot of really important Democratic actions over the years, and certainly not one that was vice president of, again, one of the most popular administrations in decades.
We're talking to Devin McAndrew Griner, who's a grad student and a Joe Biden supporter and a vocal and proud Biden supporter. Sandy Frankel will join us in a minute, the former Brighton Town supervisor, and the conversation is about the Biden candidacy. It was just a couple of weeks ago that it was pointed out to producer Megan Mack and me that you've had Andrew Yang supporters and Pete Buttigieg's contingent and Sanders and Warren and so many others. And where's the Biden panel? And it was harder to pull together. And that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. In fact, it's important to kind of continue to point out that the polls have favored Joe Biden from the beginning. Now, let me read the latest polling. Again, not because we're addicted to a horse race, but we're a week away from voting. So here we go. The confusing thing about Iowa is who's actually going to show up in caucus, because it's not just voting, it's caucusing. USA Today Suffolk says 1 week before the opening Iowa caucuses, former Vice President Joe Biden leads the field. Here's their survey. Biden in Iowa, 25. Sanders, 19. Buttigieg, 18. Warren, 13. Klobuchar, 6. Emerson College, though, has Bernie Sanders with a commanding lead in Iowa. Based on their methodology, Sanders, 30. Biden, 21. And down at 13 and 11 is Amy Klobuchar and Elizabeth Warren. Pete Buttigieg at 10%. So who knows a week from now what happens. Nationally, ABC News Washington Post has Joe Biden holding his ground at 28 nationally, Sanders 24, Warren 11. Now, you can go back to many, many previous elections and find candidates who are in third or fourth place who then surged. You know, that wouldn't be unusual. But it looks like Biden and Sanders are separating themselves right now here. What is your caution to Sanders voters beyond just sort of chaos following chaos? For those who try to appeal to you, Devin, and say that what we've learned in the last 4 years or even the last 12 years suggests that it's time for something more dramatic and more serious about an egalitarian approach to governing, what's your caution to Sanders supporters?
Well, I think there's two. I mean, number one, again, beating Donald Trump is the number one priority. Because he's a moral catastrophe. And so there's just no evidence that someone like Bernie Sanders would win a national election. I mean, you know, if I were to say to you in 2008, 2012, 1992, 96, you know, it was won by someone that was, you know, more in the centrist camp, they would say, oh, well, that was a long time ago, except that we know in 2018, it was moderate Democrats that won all the districts and allowed us to take back the House. It was the progressive Democrats that challenged other Democrats in safely blue districts. So there's no real evidence. I mean, because that's sort of where the crux of the Bernie argument rests, is that there'll be this like unprecedented huge turnout that we've never seen before from low propensity voters. But there's just no evidence for that. So they're at, and I'm not saying it's impossible. I think that the only people that could beat Trump are Bernie and Biden. But there's just no evidence for it, where there is evidence that someone like Biden will win on a national level. And the second thing is that, you know, the change that Bernie's promising and that sort of, you know, ramrodding very quickly, there's not a lot of reason to believe that it'll be sustainable, because Republicans will just come back and it'll motivate their base incredibly, and they'll come back and there'll be a huge backlash, and it won't last. You know, Obamacare was genius because it expanded healthcare by the millions, but it wasn't, you know, a single payer universal healthcare system. And so the backlash, while strong because there was an irrational hatred of Obama, was not at the level I think we'd see if Bernie was elected and tried to sort of ram down Medicare for all. I mean, there's not even a consensus within the Democratic Party. So what Biden's offering is an expansion of Obamacare, and it's better to, you know, expand healthcare for a definite number of people and have it be a resilient policy than something that is, you know, fickle and paper thin.
So when it comes to whether or not a Biden candidacy is truly a safe choice, we've already seen how the president is likely to attack Joe Biden. And we're going to hear Hunter Biden invoked daily until November. And I am curious to know if you have a problem with what Hunter Biden did. I'm not talking about validating President Trump's actions on Ukraine, because if we are simply being, I think, logical thinking people, a president that doesn't show any interest in rooting out nepotism, rooting out corruption in other countries, just happening to want to root out one case of possible nepotism and corruption doesn't really hold water. I mean, it was pretty clear what he was after. But I am asking you if you think it was corrupt in the way that people like Zephyr Teachout, who supports Bernie Sanders, have said yes. What Hunter Biden did is an example, or what he was given, what he was awarded, essentially, is an example of corruption. Do you see it that way, Devin?
Was it completely kosher? No. I mean, but I don't know that that really reflects on Joe so much as it does on Hunter. I mean, we have no reason to believe that Joe facilitated it, knew about it in any way. It sounds like, you know, it was a son that was profiting off of his last name with, you know, unbeknownst to his father at a time when his father was busy being vice president of the United States. But as far as the attack goes, it's, I mean, do we really think that Trump isn't going to find a hyper-specific attack for any of the candidates that might end up being the nominee? So the fact that we know what it will be against Biden gives us even more time to prepare for it. And I think it's reflective of his worry that Biden will be the nominee and try to sort of, you know, chop him off from the legs before he even wins the nomination. But, you know, a hyper specific attack that will be perpetual. I mean, this is Trump's brand, is branding his opponent. So, you know, we know about it because Trump's worried about Biden.
Do you think it has that attack on Biden has stuck at all? Or do you think that, as you say, he's going to lob something at everyone and, you know, to varying degrees of success?
You know, I think Trump is good at making things stick. The question is, are Democratic voters going to fall for it?
Mm-hmm. Let's talk. Let's bring in Sandy Franco, who's former Brighton Town supervisor and someone who told us early on when we were in the process of reaching out to supporters of Joe Biden. You know, we weren't just interested, Sandy, in do you think he's a safe choice? We were interested in do you think he's the best choice? And you were here to say, bring me in, Coach. I'll make the case.
Okay. First, let me say hello and thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks. I support Joe Biden because I think he is the strongest candidate to beat Donald Trump this year in the presidential election. For me, the bottom line is someone other than Trump.
Winning
the presidential election. I think we have a good field of Democratic candidates, strong people with lots of different perspectives, some core values that are the same. But I think when I look at who can beat Donald Trump, I believe Joe Biden has the best chance.
Do you think he would be the best president of the field?
I think he would be an excellent president. He has the experience. He's got the temperament. He's got the knowledge base. And I think he could walk in the door, hitting the ground running from day one. There'd be no learning curve.
Do you think a woman could win this year?
I think that's possible. It's hard to say because we have two very strong women candidates, Elizabeth Warren, who leans pretty far left, and Amy Klobuchar, who's quite centrist. And when I look at the country, in at least from a historical perspective, candidates who tend to win tend to migrate towards the center. Because we need to bring in not only the more liberal perspectives of this country, but also the more moderate candidates. And that speaks to the heartland. When you look at the polling, Elizabeth Warren is doing better than Amy Klobuchar. But a poll is a snapshot on one day, and things change so quickly in politics these days, and polling varies depending upon who you've talked with, whether they're telling you the truth or not. So, you know, the best poll, of course, is Election Day. So I think a woman has a chance to win. But when I look at the way this country is going, I think Joe Biden has the best chance to bring in some disaffected Republicans and independents, as well as having the core base of the Democratic Party behind him going into the general election. Whomever our candidate is, I'm hoping that Democrats will rally, will unite, and be behind that candidate.
So before I read some email from listeners, I want to ask Sandy and Devin a question about And I want to be fair when I ask this question, but let me just say, when we try to put together panels to discuss politics, campaigns, why people support certain ideas and policies and candidacies, it has not been hard to find Andrew Yang supporters, Elizabeth Warren supporters. It has not been hard to find supporters of Bernie Sanders, of course, Pete Buttigieg. It was a struggle to find people to come on this program who not only will vote for Joe Biden, but want to vote, or are excited about it, are inspired. And sometimes I think we put too much emphasis on that, but there is at least some importance in elections that whether you move people beyond you're not Trump, do you move people? Do you inspire people? Are you worried, Sandy, that if Joe Biden is the candidate, there may be less of that effect on the electorate, something that truly inspires people?
I believe there's enough enthusiasm and desire among the general population of this country to elect someone other than Trump this year. And I think people are going to come out and work hard and be excited to make that change happen. And if that candidate is Joe Biden, I believe they'll be right there with him as forcefully as they would for someone else who might have been there first choice.
Okay. Devin, does that concern you, an enthusiasm gap?
No, not at all, because I think that point is actually misframing the issue, because, you know, when you think of Sanders, you think, oh, well, they are enthusiastic, if nothing else. But the level of enthusiasm isn't as important as the scope of the support and scope of the enthusiasm. So Joe Biden has support in the African-American community more than everyone. We all know this. We also support in the moderate Democrats, the conservative Democrats, you know, older voters, working class, union workers. So that scope of support matters far more, because, you know, if 30% of the country feel insanely strong about Bernie and then 55% feel pretty darn great about Joe, you know, Joe's the better candidate. So I think scope matters more than the level of enthusiasm of the supporters.
All right. Let me grab a phone call first and then some of your email. This is Jane in Rochester. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Evan. I want to ask your panel there, do you think that Joe Biden would be up to, we don't have moderate issues and problems right now. We have what people are calling a climate catastrophe. So the door seems to have closed on a moderate dealing with that. And would he be up to that in terms of temperament and his abilities to handle highly controversial and solutions to the problems, and to bring the country along with him? Joe Biden has been called a corporate Democrat. I don't know for a fact, but do you know if he's been called the blue dog Democrat?
I don't know if he is technically in the blue dog camp, no. I don't think he is, no.
Let me finish that, because I said we're going to have someone tough who knows his own mind, because I recall George Bush, 41, losing the election over the issue of taxes. They threw him out totally. And I wasn't a Bush supporter, but I thought, you mean taxes mean that much that they would dump a second term, you know, Bush for the second term? And yes, they would. So Joe Biden is not going to be what we used to think of as center or moderate, because how can he be and deal with the climate catastrophe? Can you tell me what he's proposed to deal with that? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Sandy, you want to take the first shot there? Go ahead.
Joe Biden is fully conscious of and deeply concerned about the climate crisis and will take steps to address that, including rejoining the world's effort to move us forward towards a cleaner, healthier environment. When you look at the positions that Joe has taken on a variety of issues that many would consider to be liberal or left-wing, he's right there, and he's been there for a very long time, actually getting results over the years on issues that relate to reducing discrimination, education, just many different topics matter to him, and he's shown his credentials in being solid on issues that are important to Democrats, including climate. So I'm not concerned.
How's his temperament?
Temperament, I think when he expresses strong feelings, he's clear, he's strong, he's passionate, and he can excite and bring people along with him. You know, I heard him here, and this is a different subject matter, but when he came to Rochester to talk about the beginning of the photonics effort here, and I watched him. I was sitting up close, and without notes, he gave the most powerful, eloquent speech, and was so keen on the value of moving in this direction and the potential, hopefully, for job creation and innovation. So I've seen him in person talk in a way that I believe will inspire people and will actually be strong and move this country forward in addressing the climate crisis. It's something I care deeply about, and I wouldn't be supporting him if I didn't believe that he would be a strong advocate.
Okay, Devin?
I completely echo what Sandy said. I mean, there's a very strong progressive case to be made for Joe Biden. I mean, he spearheaded the Violence Against Women Act, the Brady Act, the assault weapons ban. He helped push the country forward on gay marriage. He, you know, worked hand in hand with Obama with some of the most progressive environmental regulations. So I think this characterization of sort of like a, you know, a corporate Democrat, I don't know that that's quite right. I think that's effective marketing by people that want that sort of binary choice. You either have a true, you know, real FDR Democrat that's a progressive like Bernie, or you just have, you know, a corrupt, you know, corporate Democrat. I don't think that's quite right. I think, you know, candidates are human beings, and everyone's a little bit more nuanced than that. And when you look at Joe's record, including in the civil rights movement, you know, the Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act, the Fair Housing Act protections to LGBTQ people, protecting Roe versus Wade, and doing some pretty deft political maneuvering in the Senate to make sure that the court upheld Roe v. Wade. I mean, there's a really strong case to be made that Joe Biden, and he will be, when he's the nominee, the most progressive nominee that we've ever had, including of Obama, when you look at his position. So, you know, I'm pretty okay there.
All right, so let's get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back to your emails for our guests as we talk about the case for Joe Biden. We are a week away from voting. And again, we're not here making the case. If you're sort of parachuting into connections for the first time, which, you know, shame on you, but no one's perfect. We're not just making the case for a candidate sort of arbitrarily. We've been talking to supporters from a number of different campaigns over the weeks and months leading up to the voting. And this is just happens to be the first conversation about what would make Joe Biden an appealing candidate. We've heard from supporters of Sanders and Warren and Yang and Buttigieg. Not Bloomberg. He's new to the race. We'll see if he's got sticking power in the race. And in fact, maybe we'll talk to our guests about their thoughts there. But our guests are talking about why they support Joe Biden. Sandy Frankel is a former Brighton Town supervisor, and Devin McAndrew Greiner is on the line with us. He's a grad student and a Biden supporter. If you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK. 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, a 5.0 magnitude earthquake hit Puerto Rico on Saturday. It's the latest in a series of earthquakes and aftershocks that have shaken the island over the past several weeks. Puerto Ricans in Rochester are coming together to offer relief and support. We're going to talk about what's going on in Puerto Rico, what you ought to know, and how you can help. It's Tuesday on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Sarah writes to the program and says she's surprised to hear a woman on your panel making the case for yet another old white man. Sandy Frankel, what would you say to Sarah?
Well, I would say that my bottom line is supporting the candidate I believe is best suited for the position and whom I believe in this instance can win. And so for me, that supersedes gender. Clearly, I have and continue to support women candidates, and I think it's critically important that we we add more women to the ranks of government at all levels. And I've been active in doing that, in mentoring people, in supporting women candidates. In this instance, I believe Joe Biden is the best candidate for this job and the one most likely to beat Donald Trump, which is, for me, the bottom line. So if he is the nominee, I will be there 100% supporting and working for his election. If he's not, and a woman candidate succeeds in getting the nomination, I'll be supporting that person completely, because I believe this country needs a real change, and that change has to be a change from the Trump administration.
But if, Sandy, if Republicans announce tomorrow that they felt some remorse over how the last 4 years had gone, and that upon reflection they'd like to sit this election out and let Democrats have their choice, which doesn't seem likely. Okay.
I'm more of a...
let's play a thought experiment here.
I'm a realist.
I know you're a realist, but if it's Joe Biden, Amy Klobuchar, and Elizabeth Warren, those are the only three candidates, and Republicans have said, we'll sit it out. You pick it.
I'm not going to go there. I'm sorry, Evan.
Okay. Devin...
I will say this.
Yeah.
I like positions, many of the positions that Elizabeth Warren has espoused. I was concerned when she did not have an estimate for the cost of her health care proposal. And when challenged, she went back to the drawing boards and revised that, came out with a number and a modification of her proposal. Her number is really high, and I don't know if we can afford what she is proposing, the way she's proposing it, with the timeline. But I do like a lot of her positions. I prefer the approach that Joe Biden has, which is continuing the Affordable Care Act, but expanding it in a way that covers everybody and provides a public option for people to use if they don't want to continue with their private health care plan. And making it more of a variety of choices that people have. Amy Klobuchar is very impressive. She doesn't seem to be gaining quite the traction, but I believe she brings some real strengths to the arena herself. And so it will be interesting to see how that unfolds. I'm not going to say today that I would support one over the other, because I like things about both of them. So whomever succeeds is going to have my support.
Since I'm always wrong about sports and politics, you ready for a prediction?
Sure.
1 week from tonight, Klobuchar finishes top three in Iowa. That's my prediction.
I wouldn't be surprised. I see Iowa as a real mix, because we've been hearing about the Democratic caucuses. But on the other hand, when you look at the polling of the general population in Iowa, it tends to be more favorably Republican. It's a conservative state. So Amy Klobuchar could very well get in the mix. And I would say that if Joe Biden were to be the nominee, I would be really interested in seeing him have a woman as his vice presidential running mate.
I regret to tell the Klobuchar campaign that my announcement probably effectively ends their chances.
Oh, dear.
Given how wrong I always am. Devin, what would you say to Sarah, who emailed concerned about, in her words, yet another old white man?
I understand that concern. I mean, you want to see, you know, no matter who's the best candidate, you know, if it's a woman, get elected. I think ultimately, though, you have to look at the quality of the individuals. And I know that's a bitter pill to swallow for people who have been, especially people that have been, you know, active Democrats for many years. And, you know, they saw Hillary lose to an underqualified man. So I totally get that concern. But I think, you know, ultimately, human beings are incredibly complex. I think that you have to look at the right person for the right time. There's Elizabeth Warren's incredibly qualified. I think she's made a couple of missteps, but I think she's fundamentally a positive force for good. And I think she, if she wins the nomination, she'll be an incredibly strong contender. But at the end of the day, I think with the circumstances, you know, with Joe Biden's experience, with his, you know, diagnosing of what's fundamentally at stake in this election, I think that he's the better qualified candidate to put forward. But, you know, I completely respect that opinion.
And before I get back to, I'll get Earl and West Irondequoit in a moment. I've got more email to take. Devin, real briefly, you know, Sandy brought up the Affordable Care Act and the idea of preserving it and improving upon it, which is certainly not only part of Joe Biden's legacy, was part of the Obama administration when that passed, but I think it's part of what he wants to do, not only to kind of govern, but also to contrast himself with some of the other candidates in the race, as Sandy points out. But we're also in a country right now, and Devin, you probably know this really, really well, where more than 40% of people on private insurance are on high deductible plans. So if your deductible is $5,700, you don't really have health care. You have this catastrophic care if you get cancer or, you know, a broken leg, but otherwise you don't. And that, I don't know that is sustainable. And that is part, at least currently, of the legacy of the ACA. I mean, is that wrong?
No, that's exactly right. But again, I think it's about, you know, you can't look at that necessarily in a vacuum. I'm for pro-democratic unity. So that means I don't want a party without Bernie Sanders, and I don't want a party without Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. I think Joe Biden's healthcare plan for the time is better suited for, like, sustainable change in the long run. But it's no doubt influenced by what Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren have been working for. And actually, Elizabeth Warren, to the previous emailer's point, I mean, she was sort of Bernie Sanders before Bernie was Bernie. She was on the national scene really prior to him, even though he was in the Senate longer. So she really was responsible sort of spearheading this, you know, big structural change type thing. And that's really important. But I think at the end of the day right now, if Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren were able to get the nomination, beat Donald Trump, and get elected, which I think I've already made the case, is I think it's unlikely given the scope of a national election. But if they were, they'd really have to sort of ram it through their universal health care plan, and it would sort of disrupt the system. It would energize Republicans, and they would be, you know, chomping at the bits to overturn all of it, and they'd be energized to do so. Whereas I think this sort of pushing the first down marker steadily down the field,
yeah,
I mean, that's a much stronger case for lasting healthcare benefits. But yeah, if there's no doubt that it's influenced by the work that progressives have done.
And Devin, if I could, I mean, Damon Linker just wrote a piece for The Week last week, making, in his words, the best case for Biden. And his piece, I think, reflects what you're saying, which is what Linker says is polarized politics don't really work. Polarized politics don't produce policy achievement. They inflame. And then what happens is, to the extent that you can gain any policy victory, the other side is so inflamed that they seek to win elections and then immediately tear down that achievement. Whereas Biden represents some kind of a hope that there would be something sort of foundationally built for progress that isn't immediately stripped away. I think that's how Linker sees it. And it sounds like that's how you see it, Devin.
No, I think that's exactly right. And I think you can even look back to the Affordable Care Act. I mean, you know, one of the big gripes that, you know, some of the farther left types have of the Obama administration is that he didn't go far enough, you know, with health care. I would challenge them to say that and say that they would go back in time and risk the change that he did to the face of someone whose life was saved by Obamacare. I mean, I just think that they need to be in the conversation to help help the Democratic Party have a moral center and a direction and a roadmap. But it's got to be, you know, a different approach to really enact that change that we all want and we all need.
You know, there is the perspective, and I think it's very real, and that is there's a difference between being a warrior and a diplomat. And in campaigns, candidates tend to take the warrior position, but when governing, you really have to have a diplomatic approach as well as a strong vision of where you want things to go and be able to bring people along with you. So taking the extreme positions is not necessarily going to achieve the goal that you want, and that can then tend to disillusion the supporters who believe that you were going to be able to accomplish what you promised. So knowing that you're going in and that you're going to be able to work with people on both sides of the aisle, that you're going to be able to come up with good solutions, you know, the art of compromise is what politics is about. And you've got to have the temperament and the discipline to be able to move forward in that arena.
A lot of phone calls and emails to get through. Let's keep it going. This is Earl in West Irondequoit. Go ahead, Earl.
Hi. I'll just position myself as I'm an older person, retired, 70 years old, raised in a conservative family, but I'm very much left-wing. And I wanted to comment about Devin's point about the scope of the enthusiasm for a candidate. And that's where I think there's a problem with Joe. I respect Joe a lot. I think he would make a good president, very competent, maybe even great, although I'm not quite sure about that. But I think that he's not going to get a lot of younger voters and people who don't normally vote. I don't think there's that enthusiasm there. I'm not a supporter of Bernie. I did support Bernie last time around, just as Devin did. So, you know, we were sort of brothers there. But I don't think he has the leadership capability. I think Devin is kind of right on where he would have problems with getting stuff passed. I think Elizabeth has far more skill and diplomacy that Sandy just talked about to get things done. What I hear about, you know, the moderate approach and advancing the ball, you know, down the field is like, we're just going to be stuck in this place that centrism has brought us to forever. We're never going to have universal health care. We're not going to have any real action on climate change, which is like more drastic. You know, there's more dramatic things that need to be done than people realize.
Okay. Earl, thank you. I appreciate that. I'll address some of Devin's points. I'll let him start in response. Go ahead, Devin.
Right. So, I mean, I guess the first thing is the scope of Joe Biden's support. I would just, again, reflect back to he's got the support among the broadest amount of coalition. So the African-American community, older voters, he's got some white voters, though not as much as Bernie and Elizabeth do. They sort of are winning the white vote for sure. Certainly the college educated types. But he's got, you know, union workers. So I do think that broadness is incredibly important in winning a national election. And then as far as Elizabeth Warren goes, I like Elizabeth Warren a lot. I actually interned for her back in 2012 in her first Senate run. I think she's made, I mean, so the first thing about her is just, you know, can she beat Donald Trump? I think she's made some sort of errors along the way. And I think the way she's framed her campaign has put her in a tough spot to win the Democratic primary. So, for example, you know, with her whole Native American heritage thing, not holding her responsible for any of the substance of that, but she shouldn't have taken Trump's bait. And that's not a good sign. I think with this whole Bernie thing and sort of revealing this conversation that they might have had that they had in 2018 or 2017, where Bernie said that, or it was alleged that Bernie said that a woman couldn't be president, you know, that seems like probably a mischaracterization. I'm sure there's something there, but it seems like, so I think she's made a couple of missteps that it's hard for me. And the way she's formulated her campaign is sort of like with one foot in the progressive camp and one foot in the centrist camp, so to speak. And I think that at the end of the day, you know, people are going to sort of siphon off to, you know, whatever brand that they prefer. I don't think that that's going to work in the long run. So in some ways, I want to say it's a non-starter because I don't know that she could win Trump and win the nomination and beat Trump. And then, you know, with regards to the moderate or progressive approach, again, I'm not saying that, you know, progressives or sort of, you know, more radical types should be banished from the conversation. Quite the opposite. I'm saying it's absolutely essential they stay in and they stay vocalizing their values, because without it, you know, we don't have a direction. But I do think you want someone like Joe Biden driving the car.
All right, Rick emails the following. I appreciate the argument made by your guests in support of Biden, but at this point, and speaking as a baby boomer myself, it is time for a new generation of leadership. Boomer generation presidents have had their turn. It is time now for a new generation. That said, I will ultimately support whoever wins the Democratic nomination. And Edward says the following. The presidential inauguration day for the winner of the 2020 election is scheduled January 20th, 2021. That's 2 months after Joe Biden will turn 78. Ronald Reagan left office just 2 weeks before turning 78. Joe Biden that I watched in the recent Democratic debates is not the same Joe Biden that I watched school Paul Ryan in the 2012 vice presidential debate. I am a 62-year-old baby boomer myself and a lifelong Democrat. Joe Biden has accomplished many positive things in Washington, but to paraphrase JFK, it is time to pass the torch to a new generation. Sandy, what do you think?
Well, I can start by saying I'm 78, and I don't view myself as too old to be involved and be effective. And I don't think that Joe Biden is too old to be effective as a candidate or as a president. Age is relative. And these days, people are living to 100 and more. So to think about age as the marker for who will be our president, to me, that is not a concern.
Okay, but hold on, I have to do this, Sandy. Edward is not just saying the number, though he is comparing to Reagan. He's indicating he sees cognitive decline.
I know that. Now, let me say this, too. I'm a former speech-language pathologist. I've worked with people who have serious neurological illnesses that affect their cognitive thinking, their communication skills, and so I have a sense of what I'm seeing as well. And Joe Biden has, throughout his history, made gaffes, and people know that, and that's how he is. I don't see that as a decline, but rather just a piece of how he is when he's in a debate. But I don't think it affects his functionality at all. And so I, for one, am not concerned about that. I know some people may view that differently, but that's not how I see it. And I also appreciate the perspective of bringing in a new generation. But at the end of the day, in this particular election, I think it's really important that we look at who can beat Trump. And I believe Joe Biden is the one who can do that and who can also be a very fine president. So for me, while I appreciate, understand, and respect the concerns that you raise, I come out in a different place with that.
Yeah. And Devin, I will say, I think ageism is not is something to be avoided here. I'm not a big fan of just looking at the number of someone's age and deciding that they can or can't do something. There are people who are 100 who I would trust to do just about anything, and there are people who are 58 who I would say are struggling with cognitive decline, and that affects people in different ways.
And I would also add, my mother is 98. Mm-hmm. She has some physical limitations these days, but mentally, she's sharp as a tack. And I would put her up against anybody from a cognitive and communication perspective.
Sure. And so Devin, I do think the question, though, of whether what we're seeing with Biden is any indication of decline, I don't want to play armchair expert. I'm not an expert. But I think the question is at least fair. Do you?
Yeah, I absolutely think it's fair. I mean, I think for the most of the campaign, there's been a lot of bad faith attacks launched at Biden. I don't think this is one of them per se. I just don't think it's the whole picture. So it's fair, you know, the 2012 Joe Biden that eviscerated Paul Ryan is a different guy that we've seen on the debate stage so far. But there's a couple points I have. Number one, if you've seen him on the trail or one-on-one with interviews, sharp as a tack. For some reason, that performance hasn't translated yet to the national stage with multiple candidates. Perhaps when it winnows down to a one-on-one, you know, we'll see that, because, you know, if you look at, like, for example, he did an interview on Axios on HBO. He was sharp as a tack. You know, he was not the same Joe Biden that has emerged at times. I think it's been overstated a bit, but I do think it's fair. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's like a half a tally in the negative column. And I just think there are so many other more reasons that he's sort of our best shot. And then just one final point. I don't really hold a lot of stock in sort of like, you know, new generation ushering in. And that's because, you know, when you look at what young people want, I mean, the young people are backing a candidate that's older than Joe Biden. So, you know, young people aren't necessarily, you know, if that were the real issue, they'd be all behind Pete Buttigieg. That's not the case.
Well, John from Henrietta called in to say, he says, this is not the year to be purists. We have to vote for someone who can win. And Herman from Brighton, to kind of close here, I got about 2 minutes left. Herman called in to basically say, the election is not necessarily the popular vote. I mean, Trump could lose by 3 or 4 million. He will almost certainly lose the popular vote. It's the Electoral College. Who can win, I don't know, 5, 6 states, Sandy, that matter, right?
That's really where the election is going to be won, in the states that drive the Electoral College outcome. And even within those states, it may be certain counties within those states that really carry the ball to the end of the game. So focusing on those states is going to be really a matter of strategy for the campaign for the Democrats to win in November. Hillary Clinton won 3 million votes more than Donald Trump in the general election, but she didn't win the Electoral College. And as long as the Electoral College still exists, that's where the focus really has to be.
Devin, final minute, your thoughts on that, where this election gets won and whether that impacts your support of Joe Biden.
I mean, I think that underscores my support for Joe Biden even more. I mean, I think those last two questions were sort of a nail on the head. It's like, do we want these purity tests, you know, cancel culture? You know, this is the first election where we've seen woke politics sort of like display itself on the national stage. People ultimately don't like that. Twitter likes it a lot, which is why you probably haven't found many Joe Biden supporters on Twitter.
Well, we've looked beyond Twitter, but it's a fair point.
No, it's a fair point, though. I didn't mean to suggest. I wasn't trying to cast any stones, but I think that's exactly it. And it's like the people in the diner, the people in the barbershop, the people at the union mill. I mean, these are people in Ohio, in Pennsylvania, in Michigan, Wisconsin, that like Joe Biden a lot. So that's exactly it. He doesn't need to win the popular vote. Hillary won the popular vote, and that didn't get us, you know, a defeat to Donald Trump. So I think that's exactly right.
We're going to see voting finally begin 1 week from tonight, the Iowa caucuses. And I want to thank our guests for talking to us about why Joe Biden continues to lead national polling and, depending on which poll you're looking at, the early states as well. A lot's about to happen. Devin McAndrew-Greiner is a grad student and a Biden supporter, and we're grateful for the time. Thanks for being generous with this hour, Devin.
Thank you, Evan.
And Sandy Frankel, former Brighton Town Supervisor. Thank you for making it work and for sharing your perspective as always. Great to have you.
My pleasure. Great to be here.
And also our thanks to Bob volunteering. Emma Stein is the intern. Rob Braden is the engineer. Megan Mack is the producer. Our thanks to Barsook Records for the music. And thanks for listening here on WRUR or wherever you're listening. Have a nice afternoon. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.